You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
Well, welcome to today's podcast, and today we're going to be talking about some basic food storage ideas and some tips. And we're going to do that through the lens of, we're not going to talk about the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
Okay, we're going to put the zombie apocalypse and the end of the world scenarios aside. And we're going to talk about basic food storage and the reasons why everyone should have a basic food storage. And we'll get to that here in a minute. But first, let's talk through success through action. And you were bringing up some important things about being successful, whether it's in business or just in life. And that was the idea of integrity.
Yeah. Now, it is important, I guess, for us to remember that our actions speak louder than our words.
Sure.
And no matter what we say, it's how we live our life. And whether it's a life of integrity or one that is such that people can't trust us.
Right. And so that's extremely important. And we need to be living lives of integrity. You know, there's a saying, I don't like this saying, but there's some truth in this saying, and that is perception is reality. Well, perception isn't actually always reality, but what the meaning of that statement is simply that what people perceive is what they believe, you know, to be real.
Right, because sometimes they don't have insight into whatever circumstance you may have come out making a certain choice. And it may be that you're legally in the right, but in the public opinion court of law, you're seen as somebody who doesn't have integrity.
Right. And so it's important to do that. So what you have to do then is obviously live a principled life and then maintain your principles. You know, so we look at the example of politicians, and I'm going to use the GOP as an example. You know, the Republican Party. Now, there's some good Republicans out there.
Yep.
Some. Not many.
Few and far between now.
But, you know, what we would hope is that the Republican Party would be a party of principle. Now, that's obviously what they say. But that's not what we see. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Is the reality of it is they're not principled.
Right.
They're political expediency and go in with, well, you know, in order to do this, we have to compromise over here. And I'm not talking about compromise in the fact that, hey, to get some things done, we might have to give and take. That's not what I'm talking about, compromising on basic fundamental principles.
Right.
And then so we compare that to the life of the individual. We must live a life of principle. So we need to, one, understand what our principles are and our values are. And then live according to those, regardless of the cost.
Yes, because you should value your integrity and your reputation more than money or fame or anything else. Because once lost, it's almost impossible to ever get it back.
Right, right. And you had a you were telling me an example of a business.
Yeah, that there was a large business that had gone into a deal with a very small local business, and when everything went bad, the true losers legally through that would have been a small company and it would have put it under. However, the president and CEO of the company, understanding that the reputation of their corporation was important to him and that he would look like he somehow was trying to put this little guy out of business, he decided to take the loss, since the loss was much smaller for him and much greater for the small company, and told his employees the reason why he was doing this is because though he lives a life of integrity and he wants to have integrity and he was legally in the right, he also has to have the perception of integrity from the people that are looking in. That it's not just always a matter of, well, I'm in the right, so therefore I get this, but also, is it going to look like I'm being generous or kind or living up to my principles or having integrity to others too?
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of goes hand in hand with a basic biblical principle of avoid even the appearance of evil.
Even the appearance.
So you want to avoid even the appearance of a lack of integrity or...
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, sometimes it's better to not take what our due is in order to preserve the reputation that we've built.
Right, and that, I think that goes well beyond the, well, hey, we just want to have a, you know, good PR campaign here.
Right, absolutely, because this is also in personal life. You know, sometimes we think, or we do deserve more or get more or have received more, but, you know, turning around and giving that to somebody else may be a better way for us to build relationships and build trust.
Right. And again, we're not trying to attribute all of this to somehow just monetary success or anything like that. This is living a life of principle, which is more important than those things, as you stated earlier. But there, you know, there is also some truth to, you know, we understand the law of reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live a life of integrity, people are going to have, and you could get burned on this. You could get burned on this throughout your life at times, but in many cases, if you live a life of integrity and principle with other people, they have a tendency to do that back with you.
Right.
Okay, exactly. And that is, you know, that can be attributed to business success as well. You know, if one of your values is you want to help people, even if you get burned here and there, the reality is that you're going to gain more than what you're giving.
Right.
Even if you get burned once or twice.
Yep.
So live a life of integrity.
Absolutely.
Whether it's in your personal life and in your business.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good thing. Well, let's move on to our main topic for today, which is, again, a basic food storage. So let's talk about some of the assumptions first, because again, what we're not talking about is the end of the world as we know. We're not talking about an EMP or a solar flare or the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a basic food storage that any and every family should have. Now, of course, circumstances are different, but I think what would be valuable is to have a discussion of why people should do this. And regardless of what you believe, regardless of if you think the conspiracy theories are bogus and that will never be a problem and I'm always going to be able to go to
the grocery store.
Even then, you should still have a food storage.
Yeah, well, I would think one of the most important purposes is food security. You know, so let's talk about what if someone long-term lost their job?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so even though we don't think that the world is going to end as we know it, guess what?
Your world could really change.
That's right. Personal tragedies happen all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, food, like you said, food security, of course, is hand-in-hand with financial security.
Mm-hmm.
And for the person who's maybe lost their job or maybe they're not getting as many hours or just things are tighter.
Yeah. Maybe someone in the family got sick and they're having to temporarily quit their job or put their job on hold to take care of somebody. Anytime that you have a loss in finances or a reduction in finances, it's a huge burden off of your shoulders if you know, hey, we've got enough food.
Right.
We've got enough food for
let's talk about
months.
The person who stores 6 months or even a year of food storage. Okay? Let's make that assumption. Now, if that person lost their job and let's say that with their family, whatever kind of average size family costs $1,000 a month in food, and that's not outrageous.
No.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to eat down that food storage for several months until you can get back on your feet?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, sometimes if someone loses a job, they can make just enough money to pay for their mortgage or their rent. And then, you know, again, you don't have to worry, like, what am I going to feed my kids tomorrow? We don't have any food. We got to go to the food bank and try and find handouts somewhere. You've already prepared for this day, not knowing when it would come or if it would even come, but, you know, you have that confidence of knowing I've prepared in case something like that
right.
does happen.
I think that's big. You just said confidence. And when we have that confidence in our food and financial security, we tend to make better decisions. And it's good for us.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's the same thing if somebody has a good emergency fund.
Right.
Now, if you follow Dave Ramsey's principles and you have, you know, say 3 to 6 months worth of an emergency fund, well, that you have some confidence there.
Right.
And if things do go bad, then you can be able to handle those those tougher times easier, and all of a sudden emergencies no longer are emergencies, they're inconveniences.
Right. It gives you some breathing room, and that's important, especially in those situations.
Right. So better yet, have your food storage and your emergency fund.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's when these blips happen, it's like, well, yeah, I lost my job. It's really not an emergency. Talk to me in 3 months if I haven't found another job, and I'll be at the emergency level.
Right, right.
But
it's giving you some time.
A very important reason to keep food storage. It's also very convenient.
Yeah.
It's
like going to the grocery store, only it's in your own house.
Well, sure. You're not constantly running out of things or having to make, you know, it slows you down on your extra runs mm-hmm. to the store. And so it's just, it's convenience yeah. as well.
It really is. I love having a food store that I can just walk in, and if I need something, I know I've got it. It's there. It's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So food security, financial security, it's convenient. What else? Can you think of any other reasons why everybody should? Here's one. And so, again, we're not talking about the end of the world, but we talked about the loss of job. Well, there's also any kind of a shock to the system, okay? Whether it could be just a storm,
mm-hmm.
a storm that knocked out power, or maybe it's a big snowstorm, and look, it kind of ties into everything we've talked about, but that security and then convenience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? You don't have to run to the store to get what you need.
Right.
You can sit at home and not have to venture out into the wild
right.
during a storm. You know, because even without these major scenarios that we're talking about just basic scenarios like a hurricane or a typhoon.
Yeah. Look at Hurricane Katrina. Those stores, everything was stripped. It was gone, and people did not have food, and they didn't have water, and were having to, you know, rely on the government for all of that, delivering all of their basic needs. And that puts you in a very vulnerable position. If you have a food storage and a major disaster happens, maybe an earthquake or something, where you're not able to get to the stores or all the stores are stripped bare, you know that you have food at home. You're not going to be in a panic.
Dire straits, yeah.
Out, you know, fighting with people to get food for your kids.
Absolutely. Now, and it's important to understand that was not the end of the world as we know it. That was a tiny percentage of the United States that was in. Now, for them personally, that was a disaster.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But that's our point, is we don't need an end of the world as we know it or a zombie apocalypse to have these types of situations.
Yeah, it can be very, very localized.
How about the typhoon example in Okinawa, Japan?
Oh, yeah. Every time a typhoon, you know, 2 or 3 days before the typhoon would hit, we'd all get a warning, there's a typhoon coming. You know, prepare. And I remember one time.
And that was several typhoons a year.
Oh, yeah.
During the season.
So it's so because you know they're coming, for me, we had food storage.
And water storage.
And water storage so that we didn't have to do this panic run. And so it was just interesting. One year that message came out and I was like, oh, typhoon's coming. Oh, it's payday. I'm going to go, you know, get our couple weeks worth of meat and come back because our freezer was tiny. And I get into the grocery store, and things are stripped.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like nothing, you know, no water, no bread. There's hardly any canned goods left. Yeah. I was like, what in the world happened? And I realized, oh, it's the typhoon. And nobody was prepared, and so they went and they stocked up at that point. Instead of, you know, what if we didn't have the warning? What if for some reason something came up, or we got an earthquake or whatever, and now these people are stuck with nothing?
Well, then you would have what happens in as we saw in this last windstorm. On the local forums, people panicking the very next morning saying, is there any gas stations open?
Yeah.
Okay, because of lack of preparedness. So we don't want to be that way. So again, all these reasons are important. And by the way, just as an aside, if people act like they do on Black Friday for DVD players, TVs, and Xboxes, what do you think they'll act like when there's no food on the shelves?
Yeah, and the impact of hunger does not take long. It takes a few hours. If people go longer than 6-7 hours without food, they start feeling hungry.
Right, absolutely. And that's, again, we're talking very, very local circumstances that could cause that. The rest of the country could be perfectly fine. in one city, they could be having problems, and you're going to have violence and everything else.
Right, because we're not used to being that uncomfortable. Hunger is uncomfortable.
That's right. Yeah, Americans are not used to going without food.
No.
The vast majority of them, even America's poor, doesn't go without food the vast majority of the time.
Right.
Okay, so let's move on. We talked about the reasons why. I think that's apparent. Now, what... Let's talk about what people should store.
Food they eat.
Food they eat, yes.
Because part of it is that you don't want your life to be so drastically different, you know, if something did happen. And so you're stocking up with things that are familiar. They're comfort foods. They're things that during a crisis, that's the one constant. And it's kind of nice. It's, you know, that's why we use the word comfort food and why people, you know, like to eat when they're stressed. Yeah. Because there's something comforting about the familiar in food. Yeah. And so, you know, stocking up foods you do eat, and that also means you're going to use them.
Yeah. So things that you do eat. Now, a lot of people probably don't even really know. They think they know what they eat.
Yeah.
But they really don't know what they eat. They'd be surprised, I think, if they tracked what they ate. So you could do this for just a short period of time. Maybe a couple weeks, maybe a month. Track everything that you eat. And I think we'd all be surprised.
Yeah. And that includes, you know, your family members, even what they're eating at school. Because in a crisis or anything like that, there's a possibility that everyone will have to be eating at home. I'm not saying stock up foods that they eat at school, but you should be counting those calories in. Right.
So what we're saying, and we're going to get to this a little bit later, but is that, you know, if you eat a lot of canned chicken and canned green beans and spaghetti and things like that. Well, then those are the things you should store, not the barrels full of wheat berries and things like that. Now, we're going to get to that here in a minute. But for starting out, for basics, store what you eat.
Right.
What you actually eat. Okay. Now, what about people who are on tight budgets?
Well,
it's like, well, I don't have $2,000 to go to give myself, you know, a 3 or 6 months worth of food storage.
Yeah, well, the best way for really a lot of people, most people, to build up a food store is to, like, say you buy 3 cans of tuna a week. So this week, if you don't have very much money, just buy 4 cans of tuna so that you're one up from what you normally use. If you do have a little bit more money to spare, say $20 to $50 each week or whatever, you know, double the purchase. That's a quick and easy way to just start getting ahead without having to make, you know, sit down and make lists and go in with a huge cargo cart and come out with, you know, $2,000 worth of groceries from Costco.
Right. And then that kind of leads to the importance of rotation. So you buy the extra cans. Let's say you doubled, like you said, mm-hmm. the amount of tuna fish that you buy. That doesn't mean then you eat all that, those 6 cans down to
and
nothing.
And then buy more. Right.
And buy more. It's, no, keep... You have 3 extra. Keep the 3 extra. When you get down to 3, then you're going to go back to the store and you're going to buy 6 more.
Right.
And then all of a sudden now, instead of having an extra 3 cans, you have an extra 6 cans.
Right.
And you're going to slowly build your way up with all those main staples that you eat. Of course, we're talking about shelf-stable foods.
Right. Here.
Okay, that's, you know, that's what we're talking about. Not so much
meats
in the
freezer.
However, you can do some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep in mind that obviously the limitations of shelf stable foods, and that kind of thing. But rotation, so not just tucking the 6 cans the extra cans you bought in the back, and then continue to use the ones you continue to buy
right
up front. So you have to have some type of rotation. So there's some different ways to do that.
Yeah. Well, the easiest way is to have an open shelf that's open on both the back and the front. Now, that's not always possible for everybody. You could have a real basic shelf system and set it up somewhere, hopefully, that it's not too inconvenient. Then you can always put in from one side and take from the other.
Right. So load from the back, pull from the front.
Yep. That's a super simple way to do it. Now, again, it's finding the space.
You might not have that space.
Right. So if we're talking kind of a deep pantry, then you might want to look at those can dispensers where
right.
you could put the can at the top and it rotates down.
It rotates for you.
Yeah.
Those are very convenient.
They really are. It, so it with people that have deep pantries, I have a very deep pantry, and I, that's not where I do my food storage, but if I had to do it there, I would. It's just now I've made it much more difficult if I have to try to reach back and push things forward. I don't even know how I would finagle that. I'd probably have to take things out then put them in.
And right. Then, so you're doing kind of facing on like grocery stores and things.
Yeah. And the difficult part of that is that it's, you won't always keep up with it. If you don't make a good, easy system,
yes,
it will end up collapsing.
Oh, that's key. You need to set up systems that are simple. If you set up a really complex system, you're likely going to fail. Or yeah. You're going to end up having food that goes bad eventually because it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. That's not ideal. The other is if you don't have a pantry or you can't set up a shelf system, maybe you can use a couple of bookshelves. I mean, that gives you a little bit more space. You can put up a couple of tall bookshelves, even in a hall or in a bathroom. Maybe you have some extra wall space or a bedroom where you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do some basic food storage.
Yeah, so the bottom line is simple systems and then track those systems so that you're doing a regular rotation.
Yeah.
So your average canned product, you know, that you buy from the store is going to last anywhere from a year to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And just because it expires doesn't mean that it's not edible. It means that at that point, it's starting to lose its nutrition, more of a nutritional value.
Right.
But it still may be a value to you at some point if you're looking just for calories.
Sure. Sure. And you're obviously going to do a sanity check when you open it up.
Right. If it smells bad, if it looks bad, then obviously don't.
Right. But the best thing is there's no reason that you should be – if a canned product expires in 2018 that in 2019 you were looking at that can. I mean, if you have a regular right. rotation.
Right. If you're rotating, okay. it should be fine. The other thing is where to store things, because if you don't have a large walk-in pantry or a large area in your kitchen, you're going to now struggle with, well, where do I put it? And I think most people's solutions, if they have one, is a garage.
Yes. Now, the important point here, and that's fine, especially if you live in a pretty moderate climate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to watch your temperatures. If you have extreme temperatures in your garage, for example, we lived in Yuma, Arizona, where our garage would get to 120, 130 degrees pretty easily yeah. in the summertime. That is not a place you want to store food.
Right.
You're going to significantly degrade the shelf life.
Oh, yeah. And then when you're dealing with the extreme cold, if yeah. your garage isn't staying above, you know, 35 to 40 degrees, you know, all the time. You know, it's getting down to the 20s where now you're talking, you're freezing your food.
Right.
That's not a good spot to do it either. And I'm also going to say that if you have frozen cans, it's kind of hard to use them. You know, now you're going in and picking up frozen food and bringing right. it inside to defrost it.
Right.
So yeah. rotation is going to be a little
right.
less.
So the key there is if you can, you want to find places with consistent temperatures, ideally cool and dry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the ideal. If you had a corner of a basement, for example, that was consistent in temperature and it was the humidity wasn't too bad, and that would be a good spot for it.
Right.
Now, I mean, if you're in a moderate climate, then maybe that your garage is the answer. I mean, certainly many people do that, and then maybe you just pay extra attention and you rotate a little bit more aggressively.
Yeah.
So that would be fine too. But all things that you need to think about. Food storage, as far as some of the extras are concerned, you know, we think oftentimes, and I think people make mistakes and they go buy barrels filled with rice and barrels filled with beans. They don't think about spices. They don't think about anything else.
Yeah, treats.
Or treats.
Well, one of the things is if you are going to try to subsist on rice and beans, I don't suggest that, but if you were, having a variety of spices so you can make it, you can go from an Indian cuisine to a Mexican to a Mediterranean using all just spice and flavor, that would at least add some interest to your very
bland.
Yes. Bland and monotonous
right.
Food.
But that goes, you know, it is a key mistake is that people will discard what they normally eat and then they'll store a bunch of wheat berries, beans, and rice and maybe some canned whatever, fish of some kind or meats, and then think that they're going to turn around and then live off that.
Right.
They're going to struggle with that.
Well, they are. If you don't regularly cook or prepare things with whole grains, or dryly dooms, or, you know, odd things like that that you think will store for, you know,
25 years.
Right. I'm doing it because it stores for 25 years, but I don't know how to use it at all. That's a huge mistake. If you do want to store those things, and I'm a big advocate of that, then learn to use it. Actually start implementing it in your family's diet so it's not such a culture shock when you suddenly, you know, leave behind your Lucky Charms and potato chips and go to mom's, you know, freshly ground wheat naan.
Right. Yeah. I think that we, you know, we're still talking about really basic food storage, but part of basic food storage is expanding your skill set a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are going to be some things. Maybe your family is used to eating frozen lasagnas, frozen burritos, frozen pizzas.
Right, if your freezer is packed with processed food.
Yeah, then you might need to practice not only preparing these other foods that you're trying to store, but also introducing your family to them and maybe trying to improve their diet a little bit in the meantime.
Well, sure.
I mean, that's always a good thing.
So what if somebody does have a bunch of processed food? I mean, like, hey, our family, we pull out a lasagna out of the freezer. We pull out pizzas out of the freezer. That's what we normally eat.
Hmm.
So what would you say to that person?
Well, I would say maybe what they could do is store some things that would mimic or be similar to what their family eats. So if their big thing is they have a couple of lasagnas a week, maybe instead of lasagna, you can turn to doing a special pasta where you can buy jarred marinara sauce and jarred Alfredo sauce, and you can buy the dry pasta. Those last longer, obviously, than if you lose electricity, you have no freezer.
Sure.
And you've lost that food.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you really, you know, if you really do live out of the freezer and that's where your family eats, then try to figure out what you could store on the side that could be similar to what they enjoy. Because,
yeah,
you know,
makes
even
sense.
In emergency situations, you don't want to be dreading the next meal. Like,
oh,
okay,
sure.
I know
yeah.
I've got to eat, but this tastes horrible. You still want to be feeling like you're a person and there's some enjoyment.
Sure, yeah.
Little things.
And that reminds me, you know, we've talked about this before, is inexpensive and simple ways to bring in special treats.
Yeah, okay. We have big containers of non-GMO popcorn. And I have a lot of coconut oil. So that's a way that with the coconut oil and the popcorn and a really good salt, you're getting a treat of popcorn. And
oh, sure, yeah.
Super simple to make. And
it's not expensive at all.
It's not expensive. And I make it on the stovetop. The other thing is having ingredients to make like chocolate, hot chocolate.
Okay.
So that's basic cocoa powder, sugar, a little bit of salt, and dried milk. If you don't have access to fresh milk and
yeah,
water.
Those are good. Those are really good examples. And like I said, it is nice. In fact, we don't have popcorn all the time. So when we do, it's a nice treat. And if things were tight and everything else, due to whatever reason, having that would be just a really extra special treat.
Yeah, exactly.
Special.
I also have
how we should live anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We do have big boxes.
Shouldn't probably give our kids candy every day, for example.
Well, yeah, even if several times a week, it shouldn't happen, but. Because
they don't
because,
appreciate it.
Right. Pretty soon it doesn't become a treat. It becomes an expected. And it's not even a special thing anymore. It's, I just want that and it because I crave it. And really, I mean, you're creating an addiction.
Sure. Yeah. You're it's a carb addiction is what it really boils down
to. Yeah. And it doesn't build your health. So that's a totally there's a rabbit hole. But I also store, you know, chocolate chips. I have big boxes of chocolate chips. And I know some people go, well, how is that food storage? Well, it's food storage because, first of all, women need chocolate. And we have several women in our house. But again, it's that special treat. And these are semi-sweet chocolate chips. And so I can make cookies or I can make brownies. Or I could, you know, just give each of the kids a small little bit as a treat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not storing Kit Kats or things like that.
Right.
But things that are versatile can be used for lots of different things. And ways to use it, and it just adds something.
Absolutely. Okay,
nice.
Let's talk about, again, we're sticking to basics here, but let's move into it. We've moved away from the cans that you normally buy in the store, and we'll talk about some of your, bottom line is it's inexpensive to store rice and beans and wheat berries.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like we said, you have to use them.
Yes.
So if you're going to store them, you have to use them. You have to know how to use them, know how to process them. But obviously, the whole grains store for a whole lot longer than anything processed.
Yes, they really do. And if you can get them into plastic containers, which you should, that'll keep the rodents and bugs and things like that out of those. They can last, some of those things, for 25 years.
Right, like a wheat berry.
Yeah.
If stored in the proper conditions, will last for a long time, so which gives it very good versatility and certainly helps your overall food storage, knowing that you have something that lasts for so long.
Yeah, it's a good investment. You know, the other thing is that we want to talk about nutrition. I mean, when you're storing food, you do want to make sure that you're keeping nutrition, you know, in the back of your mind. It's not like you're not going to go all organic and everything has to be this or that in food storage situations. You don't have to. But thinking about, like, I know with the wheat berries, we're getting good B vitamins.
Yeah.
Already processed white flour or even whole grain flour that's been ground in advance, those B vitamins are seeping out of it and pretty soon they're gone.
Sure. And the shelf life. The shelf life for flour is
way less, like, what, a year, 6 months, something?
Yeah, 6 months to a year, depending on how you store it. The shelf life for, like, a cracked wheat is maybe a couple years.
Maybe.
Okay, and then the wheat berry will last for decades if stored properly. So, I mean, it just gives you an idea.
It's just like coffee. When we fresh grind it, you have the oils present, you have all of the goodness present in coffee, and that's the same thing with wheat berries. Not only the taste, but all of the nutritional value that can come out of that wheat berry,
right,
which can be really important in emergencies.
Absolutely. So, go ahead.
So my recommendation for that, when you, if that's something that you're interested in getting into, then begin to learn how to use it and experiment. And so you feel at least confident and equipped to utilize all of the items that you put into your food storage.
Yep, very good. So we recommend a very simple way, and it's not too expensive. It's a little bit of money up front. But you buy the 5 gallon food grade buckets. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't have to get the Mylar bags and all that and get every molecule of oxygen out.
Yeah.
If you can do that, great. But if you just buy bags of rice or beans and put them into the five gallon buckets.
Mm-hmm.
That's better than nothing by far.
Yes,
I mean you're gonna rodents. It's gonna be rodent free. It will store for a long time. And as long as you have a good rotation, I think that would be very adequate.
Yeah, just make sure to mark the outside of those buckets, because if you don't mark them, you don't know what's inside. And a lot of times,
yeah,
it's all unorganized all of a sudden.
Right. Get back to that. It's got to be a simple system. It's got to be a system that is. It's intuitive.
Yes.
You understand it. And again, you're not putting things out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about spices a little bit. What about sugar and salt and oils?
Well, those are all basic staples for any cooking, any survival. I don't know any woman who cooks that doesn't utilize those items
so
frequently.
It's important to remember those.
Very important. And salt, I do the pink Himalayan salt, just because it has extra minerals, but getting the Morton iodized or even storing some rock salt for different applications.
Yeah.
Having a lot of salt and a lot of sugar available. And I am not a big white sugar advocate. I'm really not.
Right.
However, in the instance of trying to build food storage, that is the most shelf stable.
Right.
That will last the longest.
Right. It's kind of like the difference between white rice and brown rice.
Yeah.
White rice is going to last a lot longer because it's doesn't have the fat.
The germinate, yeah.
That goes rancid that makes the brown rice spoil quicker.
Right.
I'm not saying, you know, don't store brown rice if you want to. Just understand the limitation.
Right.
It doesn't
really
last
rotate
as long.
That. Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't. I mean, I think brown rice, you might, if you store it well, you might be able to get a year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's significantly different than white rice.
That'll
last for a long time.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the processed sugar. We don't use a lot of sugar, but we do have what I do is use a variety of different sweeteners, and so I do keep the granulated sugar, highly processed stuff in there, along with natural brown sugars and honey, maple syrups, things like that. Things that my family uses, we have just slowly stocked up on. And that's what you need to do. But do have, even if your family doesn't use it, because in times of emergency, having a bulk bag of sugar is going to come in a lot more handy than a small jar of organic honey. So, you know, that sugar can go to make breads, seasoned soups and stews, spaghetti sauces, things like that. It's really, it's necessary. Salt as well, and oil. You know, keeping plenty of oils. We use a lot of oil, olive oil and coconut oil in our house. So that those are the two primaries I have stored. I do have other things stored as well at Crisco, because again, if I can't get fats, that's a good thing to add to baked goods.
I don't like to use that.
But it can replace butter,
right?
Which you may not be able to get access to. So those are the types of things that I recommend slowly building up on, and those are all pretty cheap.
Yeah. So those are some of the basics on storing or building a food storage. But then, well, someone will probably ask the question, well, but how much, how do I know how much to store? I mean, you said, okay, double the cans. Got it. I'm doing that. Well, for how long? Well, there's many different ways to calculate how much you need for food storage. The first thing is you need to determine what's your goal, what's your objective. Are you trying to get to 6 months, 3 months, a year? And for how many people? And, you know, understanding that first. And once you have determined the end state or what's the final you're trying to achieve, then you can calculate it out. And there's so many different calculators online.
There are.
That you can go to and look at. You can do the caloric method, and you can break out and go, okay, well, if I lost my job and we wanted to eat down our food storage, everyone in my family averages 2,000 calories a day. Of course, you know, you could do that. And there's five of us, so that's 10,000 calories a day. Multiply that out. Add in, you know, a buffer based on spoilage or waste or things like that. And then you could literally do it that way. Now, that's kind of a very simplistic way of doing it. You have to be, you know, sharp. Otherwise, towards the end, you might find yourself eating, like, all rice and a lot of it.
Right, right.
So just understand that, you know, that doesn't take into account portioning things out. So, but if you get down to the point where you're saying, okay, well, everybody in the family is going to eat 4 ounces or 6 or 8 ounces of meat per day per person, then you can start getting a little bit more sophisticated. But like I said, there's lots of calculators out there that you can just plug in the stuff that you are storing, and it'll spit out, you know, numbers of ounces or cans or pounds that you need,
right,
to store for. Always remember to build in waste and spoilage and, you know, a little bit of a buffer.
Yeah, and I think this is an important point. Like, we've always said this about everything. Even if you don't have anything going on right now and you have no food storage, just start. Even if it means you go, okay, I only have an extra buck this paycheck, well, buy an extra can of tuna. You know, just start something.
Absolutely.
So that you do eventually get into a mindset of, oh, hey, this is on sale. Oh, that's a 2-for-1. I'm going to grab two more of these. So your mind is working toward building up a food storage.
Right. Now, one of the things we didn't talk about is freeze-dried foods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and again, what we're trying to avoid here is the kind of survivalist mentality of, I've got my cases of MREs or my cases of freeze-dried foods. We're not against freeze-dried foods at all. No. We're just trying to talk real basic here.
Yeah.
Freeze-dried food is great because it has a long shelf life. It maintains nutritional content. It's also pretty expensive.
It is expensive. And, you know, maybe there are some things that your family does eat that are freeze-dried because, like, you know, my sister-in-law, they munch on the freeze-dried strawberries, and which are delicious, and
sure,
different things from, you know, companies.
There's
that
freeze-dried
sell
meats and things.
Yeah. Now, and when you get into stuff like that, and if your family is big eaters of that type of thing, then definitely stock it up.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. But freeze-dried food does, you know, it has its place, an important place in being prepared for all types of emergencies. And especially if you are limited in space and you have a little bit of extra money that...
Yeah. But again, we're not talking about the end of the world as we know it, where, you know, we're talking about weight considerations and things like that. Obviously, freeze-dried foods are much lighter.
Yeah.
You have that, have to add water to it as a requirement.
Right.
We're not against it. We wanted to mention that the reason we're not talking, that we're advocating it so much here, is that we're talking basic food storage in your home, where you're at, to in order to give yourself some more financial and food security.
Absolutely.
All right. I think that's it. Anything else to add as far as basic food storage? We talked about many different aspects.
Nope. I think we covered it all.
Our verse for today comes from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And our shout out today goes to Neil in Queensland, Australia. Thanks for listening.